and good afternoon. And thanks so much for joining us for our first ever edition of WBOY Talks. I'm Sean Beter. This is the first of our occasional two-hour call-in programs we plan on holding throughout the next year to take a deeper look at interesting people and issues in our community and beyond. Later in the hour, we'll be talking about the state of public radio and our station here with our general manager, Peter Domanowski. First, though, the 2014 session of the Indiana General Assembly is just around the corner. And although it's not a budget year, the legislature has some big issues on its plate, everything from criminal code reform to tax cuts. In just a moment, we'll invite our panelists and you to join the discussion about the upcoming session. First, though, a look at one of the marquee issues in 2014, the debate on whether to include a ban on same-sex marriage in the state constitution. If the legislature approves the measure again as it did in 2011, voters would ultimately decide whether to make the ban a full amendment. WBOY's Virginia Alvino brings us up to speed now on the amendment and the outside groups that have joined the debate.
If you thought that same-sex marriage was already illegal in Indiana, you'd be right. Current state law says marriage is between one man and one woman, and that's that. Also banned is any kind of legal recognition for same-sex couples, including domestic partnerships and civil unions. What legislative leaders are looking at now goes a step farther. They face a proposal to enshrine these restrictions into the state constitution. Proponents say that would essentially protect the state law from judges overturning it in specific cases. Micah Clark would like to see that happen. He's the executive director for the American Family Association, a group that supports the constitutional amendment.
This is about preserving the public policy ideal of marriage. It's not about changing what private corporations do or changing individuals' behavior. It's about upholding the ideal that marriage is a special union between a man and a woman.
And a lot of legislators have agreed with him. The law banning same-sex marriage came into effect in 2004, and every year since then, there's been an effort to create a constitutional amendment reiterating it. House Joint Resolution, or HJR 6, is the name of the proposal. It was approved by a wide margin in both houses in 2011. But to create the amendment, it would need to be taken up by and approved by the current legislative session, and then by voters. Micah Clark says getting the proposal to the ballot is his organization's ultimate goal.
Because we wanted to take this issue out of the hands of activist judges and leave it with the people.
We have legislators for a reason. We've elected them to make decisions. And, you know, what makes this issue so much more important that the people should vote on it than any other issue that we have a law on? And by the way, we already have a law on this.
That's Megan Robertson, campaign manager for Freedom Indiana. The coalition formed earlier this year, aiming to stop the measure before it gets to voters.
You know, we do have a state statute. It has stood up in the courts. And so it's really a redundant and unnecessary amendment. And, you know, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to add it to the state constitution, our founding document.
The groups gained a lot of traction building a statewide bipartisan coalition of businesses, educational institutions, and individuals. Purdue University, Ball State, Indiana University, and others have joined Freedom Indiana, citing a number of reasons, from economic impact to principles of inclusion. And businesses like Eli Lilly and Cummins are on board, along with a number of mayors, including Tom Henry in Fort Wayne and Greg Ballard in Indianapolis.
Whether it's for marriage equality or just saying that we don't need an amendment to the Constitution or saying that it's harmful for business as they're trying to recruit the best and the brightest to their companies. Everybody's got different reasons to be involved, but we all agree that HJR 6 is bad for business, bad for Indiana.
It's clear a lot of people have an interest in the issue, and Micah Clark says people will express that interest.
This is going to be a huge campaign. A lot of money will be spent on both sides.
But Clark says it shouldn't be up to businesses, the courts, or even the legislature to decide.
There may be changing opinions on how people view marriage or what marriage should be. But the way to determine that is to let the people decide this issue. Let the people vote on it.
But before ordinary Hoosiers get a vote, the legislature has to decide which way it wants to go. For WBOI News, I'm Virginia Alvino.
Thanks to Virginia for that piece. Of course, lots to chat about in this hour of WBOY Talks, and we'll start with the issue we just heard about. Joining me in studio now, Andy Downs from the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at IPFW, and Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Gentlemen, thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here, Sean.
And joining us by phone, it's our State House reporter with Indiana Public Broadcasting, Brandon Smith. Brandon, thanks for joining us again.
Well, thanks for having me on.
And we hope our listeners will get in touch with us this hour, 1-800-471-9264. Or you can always get to our WBOY Facebook page, comment on a post about this issue, or you can tweet us as well. It's at WBOI. Andy Downs, we'll start with you. This amendment has been kind of on the back burner, I guess, for the last few years. Now legislators either have to, well, deal with it or not, I suppose. This is do or die time for the same-sex marriage amendment.
It is in this particular form. If it's amended, one word changed, we start the clock over again. If it's defeated, we start the clock over again. If they fail to vote on it, we start the clock over again. And so there's a reason there's a lot of attention in this particular session. And what people have to remember is this is the first of two steps. If it is approved in its current form, then it goes on the ballot in the fall of 14. And that's when you and I, the voters, will get to have our say on it. It will be, if we think we've seen a lot of activity now, let's just remember this is what they're doing to get the attention of 150 legislators. Imagine what they're going to do when they're trying to get the attention of 6.4 million people in the state of Indiana. It was, I think, an understatement to say that there will be an awful lot of money spent on this if it actually makes it on the ballot.
Well, and there's going to be just even more passion than there is money because, you know, people favoring the amendment would look at gay marriage as an astounding upending of tradition. Yeah, people who are opposed to it may take it very personally as telling gay people that they're less worthy of marriage than straight people.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, this is
passions are strong on this.
And so, Bob, when you take the passion there and you take the money that will be flowing in, because remember, there will be people donating from around the country. If this does not happen in Indiana, a lot of people will say, well, then where can it happen? So there will be a lot of money and a lot of passion, and that's usually a combination that results in a lot of activity for us to see. And fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective, an awful lot of voter activity as well.
Brandon Smith, we've been hearing a lot of stories from you in the past several weeks and months, of course, looking at a lot of the legislative issues, some of which we'll talk about coming up in 2014. Where do folks stand on this issue now? I don't feel like I've heard an awful lot about the amendment. I think the last word really was that the legislators weren't sure if they were going to bring it up at all.
Well, no, but the legislative leadership, Republican legislative leadership, who are really the ones in control of whether the issue comes up, have said that they are going to treat this bill or this proposed amendment the way they treat any piece of legislation. It will be, if it's authored, if it's offered and by a legislator, it will be assigned to a committee. The committee chair then makes the decision whether to hear that amendment in his or her committee. And then the committee votes on it, and then it goes to the full House or the full Senate and vice versa. They keep saying they're going to treat it like a normal bill, a normal piece of legislation. We'll see if that actually is the case. Democratic leadership have called on the Speaker and the Senate President Pro Tem to kill the amendment now, to not even bring it up, to not let it get to the committee process, to just kill it and hold off on what they're calling a very divisive debate.
And this issue, and I do want to remind our listeners, if you'd like to get in touch with us to chat about the 2014 legislative session, we hope you'll call us at 800-471-9264. Go to our WBOY Facebook page, send us a tweet at WBOY. I know a lot of folks are very passionate about the issues we see in the legislature every year. This amendment was approved the first time back in 2011, kind of a different time almost. It seems like a long time ago in terms of polling in that so many Americans in so many states now, in fact, seem to be on the favorable side of allowing same-sex marriage to happen, or at least not letting a ban like this come into play. Andy Downs, should legislators be looking at the polls, looking at the folks they see around the country?
Well, that's a question that you ask legislators when they're running for office. Do you think you're there to do what you think is right, or do you think you're there to do what the people tell you to do? And obviously what is happening in Alabama or California or Maine, those are not Hoosier voters, at least not in most senses mm-hmm. of the word. So really, if they're going to be listening to people, they should be listening to the people in their districts here. But if you do look at the national trends are that this is something that is viewed as much more acceptable. Same sex or same gendered marriage is becoming much more acceptable. And I think that's part of the reason that we're seeing the emphasis we're seeing this year. I think there's a recognition that public opinion does appear to be changing, at least on the national level. And that could be something that results in, you know, 2 years from now, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now, where the norm is the acceptance of same-sex or same-gendered marriage. So I think that's part of the reason you see the emphasis happening in Indiana this year.
Brandon Smith, on the issue of polling, and you know, we take it with a grain of salt, of course, but I believe Freedom Indiana came out with a poll earlier this year showing that Hoosiers were in favor of letting this amendment die. Is that right?
Yes, they did, and groups like American Family Association, who's Micah Clark, we heard in that piece a little while ago, they came out with a similar poll, but that said the exact opposite, that mm-hmm. Hoosiers are in favor of banning same-sex marriage. But I think the key to the Freedom Indiana poll is that an overwhelming number of Hoosiers polled in that survey were not in favor of putting the same-sex marriage ban into the state constitution. I would not say that Hoosiers have shifted entirely on their position on same-sex marriage. I think Hoosier voters would not support getting rid of the state's ban on same-sex marriage, but they aren't in favor of putting it in the Constitution, which many people see as a step, an unnecessary step that goes a little too far.
Bob Kaler.
A question for Andy and Brandon both. We've seen in the last several weeks or months a huge number of prominent publicity success stories for opponents of the amendment. You know, universities coming out against it, and CEOs of companies coming out against it. I know that there are plenty of prominent people and institutions who would be in favor of this ban, too. Why do you think the tactics of the two sides are so different? And you haven't had that same kind of parade of opposition or support for the amendment.
I think we have to remember there are multiple ways to deal with lobbying, and that's basically what we're talking about right now. I think that when it comes right down to it, Freedom Indiana wants to make sure that people understand this is something that is viewed as much more acceptable. You know, so they're fighting the norm. As Brandon pointed out, if we asked people outright, do you want to get rid of the ban, I agree with him. I'm not so sure there's a majority of people who would say get rid of the law. There does appear to be a majority saying we're not so sure about putting it in the Constitution. So Freedom Indiana has to make sure that there is an understanding that there's a pretty big chunk of folks out there, and some of them quite influential and opinion leaders, who think this is a bad idea. And so the parade of prominent individuals who are doing this is an attempt to convince other individuals that this is not something that they should be supporting. When it comes to what the American Family Association and other groups groups on the other side are doing, they understand that what needs to happen is the convincing of 51 members of the House, 26 members of the Senate. And so they're talking to members of parishes when we're talking about churches or congregations, and they're getting them, they're encouraging them to contact directly. You don't have to see this publicly. This is really something initially that involves 150 individuals. And so I think you're seeing two very acceptable and certainly workable ways to approach this issue.
Brandon Smith, I'd like you to weigh in on that a bit too. I mean, you're in the State House constantly talking with our legislators. Is there a feeling that these opinion leaders, these folks coming out in opposition to the amendments, they might have an impact?
I think you're starting to see a small shift in terms of we heard in that piece the legislature overwhelmingly approved this amendment in 2011, but that seems like a very long time ago, at least when it comes to this issue. We are already starting to see some Republicans waver on the issue, and one Republican, Shelbyville Republican Representative Sean Eberhardt notably came out with a very strong statement saying that he had changed his mind. He was going to switch his vote. He had voted for the amendment in 2011. He says he will not vote for it if it comes up this year, or in the upcoming session, I should say. I still think when you talk to people around this building that if it comes up for a vote in the House and the Senate, most people here think it will be approved, but it won't be as overwhelming as it was 3 years ago.
And let's remember, David Long, President Pro Tem, actually said he out in the public, he said, I don't expect it to pass with the same sort of support that it had before.
Right.
And for a lot of legislators, they can say, I think this is important enough that people should get to decide, and they can cast a yes vote even though they may themselves actually be opposed to it, but it gives them some political cover depending on the nature of their district.
Right.
Well, we'll have to see as the 2014 session begins early next year. We have more discussion coming up, but we do need to take a quick break. In the meantime, we hope you'll get in touch with us. If you have a question or comment for Andy Downs or Brandon Smith, do call us 1-800-471-9264. You can always go to our Facebook page and comment there, or tweet us at WBOI. Stay with us. This is WBOI Talks.
A decade of war is now ending.
President Obama had high hopes for 2013.
An economic recovery has begun.
But things went downhill from there.
The House is going to do its own job developing an immigration bill.
My name's Ed Snowden. I'm 29 years old.
We fumbled the rollout on this health care law.
Obama's bad year today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon from 4 to 7 here on 89.1 WBOI.
Hi, I'm Rob Martinez, the host of The Nights Before Christmas. Please join me this Friday, December 20th from 8 to 11 p.m. as we listen to an hour of Christmas jazz and blues and highlights from my 2012 Christmas specials. You can listen online at WBOI.org or right here on your home for NPR News and diverse music, 89.1 WBOI.
The woman was on the ground and the bull was tossing her in the air and back on the ground.
And where were you?
I was right on the other side of the fence, but the fence was electric.
Why is it that certain people will risk their lives for a stranger?
I went ahead and just climbed through the fence.
While others won't.
My neighbors would not help me.
That question this week on Radiolab. This evening at 7 here on 89.1 WBOI.
Thanks for your generous support during 89.1 WBOI's year-end fund drive. Together, we'll make our programming and journalism even stronger in 2014. It's not too late to make your tax-deductible investment in the future of public radio. Just call 452-1189 or go online to WBOI.org and click Support the Station on the top right corner of our homepage. Together, we'll continue to provide Northeast Indiana with the best in great programming and in-depth reporting on WBOI.
And good afternoon. This is WBOI Talks right here on 89.1 WBOI. It's the first of our occasional two-hour call-in specials we plan on holding throughout the next year, taking a deeper look at our community and issues affecting the state. During this part of our program, we're talking about the 2014 Indiana legislative session, and we hope you'll get involved in the discussion. It's 1-800-471-9264, or you can always go to our WBOI Facebook page. Tweet us at WBOI. We just talked a bit about the same-sex marriage amendment that we're sure to hear more about as the session begins. We're going to move on a bit now, and Brandon Smith from Indiana Public Broadcasting and Andy Downs from the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics, both here with us. Brandon, I want to pitch this next portion to you first. Mike Pence has slowly been giving us his legislative agenda and slowly trickling out details about at least parts of the agenda. And we're hearing a lot about revenue and tax cuts, especially with revenue coming in so low in this last update. Tell us a little bit about the tax proposals Governor Pence is looking at in the upcoming session.
Well, by far the tentpole of his legislative agenda for the upcoming year will be, and he's been very careful to say he doesn't think it's a tax cut, it's tax reform. That may just be a semantic difference, because what he's talking about doing is phasing out the state's business personal property tax. That's a tax that on business equipment. So anything from the office chair to the equipment in the factory down the street. So that's a tax that brings in about $1 billion a year, and that's money that all goes to local governments around the state of Indiana. He's talking about getting rid of that tax, but he's not saying do it all at once. He's talking about a phase out. And he's really leaving it open, really leaving it up to the legislature to figure out how to do that, because he's been very careful to say that while he wants to get rid of the tax, he doesn't want to do it in a way that's overly burdensome to local governments. So the trick is, okay, so we want to get rid of the tax, but that's $1 billion we have to replace. Where do we find the money? How do we find the money? And how will that all work? And he's really stayed out of that for the most part. He's been very coy about giving us specifics, and he's says that's on purpose. He doesn't want to color the legislative debate. He wants to leave the broadest range of options open, and so he hasn't really waded too far into the weeds, the details, on how you might actually phase that tax out.
Would you expect those details to come much or at all before the session starts?
Not much, no. I think, and a lot of lawmakers I talk to don't think that the specifics will be figured out this session. It is a short session. We'll be done by mid-March as opposed to a budget year when we're done at the end of April. And it is a non-budget year. We're in the middle of a budget cycle, so there's only so much you can really do when it comes to the fiscal side of things this session without having to completely reopen the budget, and lawmakers are hesitant to do so. So the lawmakers I talk to think we can start talking about how to phase this tax out now. We might even have a bill that contemplates phasing it out over a 10-year period or something like that. But the real hard work of figuring out how to replace that money probably won't take place until the next budget, which would be the 2015 session.
Hey, Brandon, one of the rumors that's been floating around is that instead of a phase-out, that each local government would get to decide for itself when to do it with a deadline by which all would be gone. Do you think that's a viable option, or is the phase-out more viable?
I think they're both viable options. That option that you just brought up, leaving it up to local governments to decide, that was floated first. We first heard it from Speaker Brian Bosma, who mentioned that that's how they did the inventory tax in this state, that they first let locals decide when they wanted to phase it out with a, you know, eventually everybody had to phase it out. And Governor Pence did mention that as a possibility just this week during a speech when he talked about the business personal property tax. So that's one way you could do it. The phase out is another way, and there are a couple others as well that have just been mentioned, and there are probably a lot more that haven't been publicly discussed.
I do want to quickly throw in here, this is actually quite a good move by Pence politically to not provide the detail, because if it's legislators who actually have to come up with suggestions for how this is done, they will take ownership of those suggestions. If he had simply said to them, it'll be phased out over this many years, that this revenue will be used to replace it, they could all sort of float that out there. If it was not well received, they could run away from it. But this way, if they're the ones who are proposing it, then they're going to have to stand up and be willing to take the, you know, the shots for it. And Pence maybe ends up getting what he wants. He also gets to continue to present himself as somebody who is respectful of the legislative branch and allowing them to do what they want to do.
I want to remind our listeners, this is WBOY Talks, and we are inviting you to become a part of the conversation today. We're talking about the 2014 Indiana legislative session. Call us with your questions or comments, 800-471-9264. You can always go to our WBOY Facebook page, tweet us at WBOI, and we'll try to address your question on the air. Bob Kaler.
Have you gotten any kind of, either Brandon or Andy, have you gotten any kind of early read from economic development people or local officials about whether there would be advantages in nobody having abatements on industrial equipment? Would that do anything to level the playing field among counties in recruiting business?
I'll take that one first. I think it's something of a mixed bag. We heard, to your point, a lot of local economic development officials get to dangle this carrot to companies. Say, you come here, we won't charge you this tax for 5 years or 10 years or whatever. And that is a nice tool to have in the bag. But at the same time, Governor Pence and his people kind of keep bringing up the argument that we don't even know, we're not sure how many economic development opportunities we don't even get in on because companies won't look at a state that has this tax, and particularly one that's a little higher than a lot of other states in the nation. So Indiana's not alone in having this tax, though they have one of the higher rates. So that by getting rid of the tax entirely, or at least phasing it out and eventually getting rid of it entirely, you open the doors up even wider to more companies so that, yes, the local officials won't have that carrot to dangle, but they will have more opportunities to dangle their other carrots for companies to come to Indiana.
One of the things that's interesting about tax climate, if you look at the work of the Tax Foundation, which is not typically viewed as a bunch of crazy liberals, but the Tax Foundation projects a business or a tax climate, and Indiana's for 2014 is ranked 10th, I believe it is, ranked 10th, and Michigan is the next closest at 14th, I think. So already, given the circumstances we're looking at in next calendar year, Tax Foundation says Indiana has a pretty good tax climate. And I think, it's interesting that Brandon pointed out that you have other tools that you can use. There's an argument that can be made that the fact that you can say to people, hey, we will offer you this abatement, is a tool. So the fact that you have the tax actually gives you the ability to have a tool that could be used to attract. So it's not as simple as anyone would like to think. And so it depends on a really large number of variables.
One last point on this before we move on, Andy Downs. This is we talked about it, but it's worth stressing that these revenues, if there's a phase out or if the personal property tax goes away, the revenues go away from local governments, from say the city of Fort Wayne, et cetera. It seems like a very interesting political dynamic that the Pence administration is addressing right there.
Well, it's huge. If this money were to go away, the state, for all intents and purposes, won't feel it at all, other than local governments will be quite upset. If people have been paying any attention, and even if they haven't been paying attention, they've heard local governments, whether it's school corps, townships, cities, counties, all talking about tax caps and the effect of tax caps and how they've had to completely restructure how they get their revenue. Fort Wayne and therefore Allen County dealt with a rather significant tax restructuring earlier this year. So to change again, in other words, to put another financial burden on a community, and I'm trying to remember Fort Wayne and Allen County. I want to say it's maybe $50 million, but I could be high there. That would be lost if this particular tax was gone. That's not an insignificant amount of money. That's a lot of money, and Fort Wayne did things that it thought put it in a good position to deal with the effects of the tax caps, and now would be right back at needing to do something yet again.
It looks like we had a comment on Facebook here. Karen commenting on an issue we talked about earlier, the same-sex marriage amendment. Other people's rights shouldn't be determined by other people, according to Karen. Did not transfer because we changed topics. So, Karen, we thank you for weighing in on the debate here. Of course, if more folks want to weigh in, go to our WBOI Facebook page. Call us 1-800-471-9264. Brandon Smith, of course, another topic of folks in Indianapolis will be looking at during this legislative session, the reform of the criminal code. We had a lot of it last year, but there's more work to do. Bring us up to speed.
Well, we passed the bulk of the criminal code overhaul legislation last year, but we made it effective July 1st, 2014, with the And that was done on purpose so that this upcoming session they could make some more changes, fine-tune the legislation to make sure when it gets rolled out and gets and becomes effective, it works properly. I was actually at a meeting, the final meeting that a legislative panel who's looking at that criminal code reform legislation, they've had 7 meetings over the summer, which is a lot for a legislative panel over the summer. Their last one just wrapped up about an hour and a half ago. They are making some minor changes here and there. And the biggest thing was they were trying to figure out how much money they're going to have to give local communities as part of this legislation, because part of the aim of the overhaul is to move low-level first-time offenders, nonviolent offenders, away from the prison system to local community corrections, rehabilitation, probation services. The thinking there is by moving them away from the prisons, you reduce the likelihood that they're going to reoffend and return to the criminal justice system. But they hadn't gotten an answer as to how much they would have to give local communities based on how the bill will work. Well, we finally got an answer today, and it's $10.5 million a year for local communities. It seems like a pretty low number to a lot of people, including lawmakers, but the idea is the idea that one lawmaker floated was you start with a relatively small number, like $10.5 million a year, and it sort of gets the snowball rolling. It helps boost services in a lot of the counties in Indiana. And once we start to see those programs improve and we see the legislation go into effect and really start to work, we'll start to save money because fewer people will be going back to prison. And one study cited today by the guy who told us that it will cost $10.5 million is a study conducted in Marion County just a couple years ago said for every 1% you reduce the recidivism rate, you will save $1.5 million. So by planting the seed of $10.5 million now, the hope is that we will end up saving money in the long term and we can boost the money going to local communities for these programs.
Andy Downs, I see you very, very contemplative over there. There's a lot of shifting in this reform too, as Brandon said, from the state government to local communities, something cities all over the states are always raising their voice about.
One of the questions I think people will be asking is, just because I'm spending time in a county facility instead of a state facility, does that mean I am going to be less likely to be a repeat offender? I mean, recidivism is really what this comes down to. And alternative sentencing programs are what people usually look to as the way to resolve those issues. So things like drug court or reentry court, those sorts of things, or Hope Project here in Allen County. Changing the location, I'm not so sure that there's a lot of research, and Brandon, maybe somebody brought this up in the hearing, but I'm not sure there's a lot of research that says that's going to be the thing that helps to reduce repeat offense.
Well, you're absolutely right, Andy, but that's one of the things that was talked about is the way to reduce recidivism isn't simply to shift to a county facility, it's to put people into the community, let them go back to their homes, but increase supervision. So in a lot of cases, this $10.5 million could be used for boosting probation officers on the ground in these counties who can keep an eye on offenders in the community. And remember, these aren't murderers who are going back into their homes. These are low-level, often first-time offenders, nonviolent, and they tend to be drug offenders. That is the largest population that we're talking about here. So put them back in their homes and make sure that they have an environment that will be conducive to reducing recidivism, so making sure they get a job or get the education they need, and particularly make sure that they have rehab, whether it's drug rehab or alcohol rehab or whatever it is. That's a huge part of this. So it's not about shifting them from state prison facilities to the county jail. It's about shifting them literally back into the community where they can have more access to the programs they need to help them recover so that they don't just re-enter the criminal justice system.
We are almost out of time for this portion of our program. Andy Downs, last word.
How does this sort of jive, though, with the idea of the longer sentences required by those who are required to serve them? So, Brandon, what was the calculation on the cost side?
Well, I think there's still some unanswered questions, and that might be one of them. They haven't quite figured out yet how all of the sentencing and sentence lengths are going to work, because they changed what's called credit time. So you have to, right now under the state's current law, you have to serve at least 50% of your sentence. The criminal code overhaul increased that to 75% of your sentence for everybody. And now they're talking about, well, we need to lower that for low-level offenders, because otherwise, if you raise it for everybody, it undoes every aim of the criminal code overhaul in the first place.
That's unfortunately all the time we have for this portion of our program. But Brandon Smith, State House reporter with Indiana Public Broadcasting, thank you very much for taking time. I know you've got a lot of busy days coming up down there.
Not a problem. Thanks so much for having me.
Andy Downs from the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at IPFW. Thank you very much for joining us again.
It is always a pleasure, Sean.
Bob Kaler and I will be back in just a few moments here to talk about the state of public radio. Stay with us. This is WBOY Talks.
A decade of war is now ending.
President Obama had high hopes for 2013.
An economic recovery has begun.
But things went downhill from there.
The House is going to do its own job developing an immigration bill.
My name's Ed Snowden. I'm 29 years old.
We fumbled the rollout on this health care law.
Obama's bad year today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon from 4 to 7 here on 89.1 WBOI.
It's time to meet Muzaire. Meet Muzaire.
Happy holidays. I'm Julia Meek, and this week on Meet the Music, we're trimming that audio tree with seasonal music from L the Remnant, Smooth Edge 2, the Schooley Family Holiday Band, and Farmland Jazz Band. That's tonight at 8, a two-hour serving of homegrown holiday goodness here at 89.1 WBOI.
I got my guitar and I've got my band.
Hi, I'm Rob Martinez, the host of The Nights Before Christmas. Please join me this Friday, December 20th from 8 to 11 p.m. as we listen to an hour of Christmas jazz and blues and highlights from my 2012 Christmas specials. You can listen online at WBOI.org or right here on your home for NPR News and diverse music, 89.1 WBOI.
It's the time of year to think about the tax benefits of donating your used vehicle to 89.1 WBOI. Just call 866-647-7227 or donate online at WBOI.org under the support menu. We'll handle all the details and you'll be set for a 2013 tax deduction. Be sure to call before December 31st for the WBOI Vehicle Donation Program. 866-647-7227.
Afternoon, 3:43. I'm Sean Beter, and this is WBOY Talks, a special presentation. The first of many call-in programs we'll be bringing you throughout the course of the next year and beyond, diving into special issues and in interviewing lots of folks who have an impact on our community. We just heard from Brandon Smith and Andy Downs. Thanks again to them for joining us for this program. In the last 15 minutes or so here, we wanted to update you on the state of public radio and the state of 89.1 WBOI. And we hope you'll get involved in the conversation in the last portion of our program here. All you have to do is call us, 1-800-471-9264. You can go to our WBOI Facebook page or tweet us. It's at WBOI. With us for the final portion of the program as well, it's Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel and our general manager, Peter Domanowski. Good afternoon, Peter, and thanks for taking a little time out for us.
Good afternoon to you and Sean and you, Bob. And it's good to be in the studio without having to directly ask people for financial support. So,
let's dive right in here and ask the big question we're posing. What is the state of WBOY as we finish up 2013 and your first year really here at the station?
Almost my first year, yes. Almost. I think the state of the station is very, very good. And allow me, if you will, gentlemen, to provide our listeners with a figure that they may not be familiar with. I'm just wondering if you had to guess over the course of a year how much time this community spends listening to the stations of Northeast Indiana Public Radio, that being 89.1 WBOI and Classical 94.1 WBNI. How much time do you think that would be? Well, as you might guess, I'm going to tell you. This community spends more than 16 million hours. Yes, you heard me right. More than 16 million hours listening to our two radio stations, which is both, I think, a compliment to our programming, but also, as I know you realize, Sean, an incredible responsibility at the same time to maintain and increase both the quality of what we do and to always try to provide the best in content, whether that's produced here by the WBOI news staff or by our music and cultural folks like Julia Meek or the national programming we obtain from NPR, the BBC, and other sources. We are constantly, daily, continuously seeking to not only maintain those standards, but to improve them so we can serve people not only more, but in a higher quality fashion.
We already have a caller on the line, and we'll, John, we'll get to you in just a moment here. But as many listeners know, as you know, Peter, this station in the last few years, really since the recession, some major challenges facing 89.1 WBOI and Classical 94. Have we overcome those yet? There were some debt issues, some financial problems. Things are looking up. Where do we stand, though?
Well, have we overcome them entirely? No, but have we made incredible progress, and are they in relative terms under control? Absolutely, yes. Many years before I arrived here, and of course I arrived in March of this year, there was a debt that approached $2 million. Now that's down to closer than to about $700,000, and we are in the process right now of making several moves, which by the end of the first quarter of 2014 will do several things. One, it will further reduce that debt. It will probably bring us down to having only one major creditor, if you will, with a very, very predictable monthly payment that we can make a part of our overall budget to ensure that both that we are satisfying our obligations from a business point of view, as well as satisfying our obligations to listeners to provide that quality and expand on the quality that I referred to a few minutes ago.
We do invite our listeners to join us, of course, in the last few minutes of the program here. If you have a question or comment for our general manager here at 89.1 WBOY, Peter Domanowski, it's 1-800-471-9264. You can comment on our Facebook page or send us a tweet at WBOI. Let's open the phones here and go to John. John, good afternoon. You're on WBOI Talks.
Good afternoon. I've addressed this with Sean before, but I wanted to talk to Peter. I'm a former, actually I was on some of your fund drives before. I actually worked in your office, and I was a contributor until you took my BBC away in the morning. And BBC's worthless to me at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If I get it in the morning, that's late afternoon, evening in Europe, and I get to see what happened in Europe. By the time I get it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I've heard it somewhere else, or I go to listen to it on the Internet because I want to know what's happening in the morning here that happened in the afternoon or the former day there. And so I've just lost a reason for contributing and helping you with your debt. Thank you.
John, we appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Peter Domanowski, of course, there are a lot of major program changes here at the station and across public radio. If you could address John's concern.
I'd be very happy, and thank you, John, for that call. And I know that we have spoken about this once in the past. First off, we have a number of hours of BBC programming on our schedule. You can hear it every night from 11 p.m. until 5 a.m., as well as now from 3 to 4 p.m. in the afternoon. So it's an international news source. It's it's a source other than NPR or other American news networks that we think provides a valuable perspective. There's a blessing and a curse, if you will, to being a radio station with lots of listeners. In a typical week, approximately 37,000 listeners tune in to 89.1 WBOI. Well, that's wonderful. We want to increase that. The difficult part about it is, of course, there's probably 37,000 slightly different ideas about what the ideal program schedule would be for any individual listener. And so obviously, until we get to the point in technology where we're not quite there yet, where we can provide each specific program according to every individual listener's needs, we have to provide a programming schedule that, of course, we can afford financially, that we think fulfills our mission and our quality expectations, and that we think will work best for most of our listeners most of the time. In doing that, we realize there will be folks like John that, for one reason or another, a particular program is not scheduled at the most convenient time for them, and we apologize for that. We always do our best to satisfy most of our listeners most of the time, and we'll continue to look at the reaction and listenership to those programs, and if over time we see a negative trend, we'll take steps to see if we can improve that.
Bob Kaler.
One of the interesting behind-the-scenes moves here this year was the NIPR hired a second person to cultivate and sustain relationships with the business supporters. Is the news on that front as good as it seems? Is there that much more support from businesses?
Well, our new business development specialist, Charlie Wirkinger, has just been with us for a couple of months now, so it's still new, and he's starting with a clean slate. He's literally starting with no list of clients, if you will, and building that list himself. So he realizes, and we realize, it will take some time for that tree we're planting to bear
fruit.
Dress
warmly for the cold calls.
Yeah, yes, indeed, Bob. But we know this, that we have to diversify the way we raise funds. We can't depend on listeners to provide the entire amount of what we need to operate and to grow. We can't certainly expect the government to do it, because government funding is shrinking and only about 10% of our budget. We can't expect foundations to provide it all. So we're looking to the business community, thinking that there's a lot of untapped potential there. And if we're patient and persistent, that more support will come from that business community, because most people know that the opinion leaders in every community, not just the greater Fort Wayne area, almost always tune into NPR stations, and we can provide that audience for businesses that are interested in reaching those folks, as well as providing fantastic programming. So for the medium and long term, we're very, very optimistic on that being a positive revenue source that'll allow us to maintain and grow our service to the community, Bob.
Just about 7 minutes left in the program here. If you have a question for our general manager, Peter Domanowski, we hope you'll get in touch. Give us a call, 1-800-471-9264. Of course, you can always go to the WBOY Facebook page, post your inquiries there, or send us a tweet as well. It's at WBOI. Peter, it looks like we have another caller on the line here, in fact, and I'm just waiting for a name to come up. Let's see. We've got Carrie on line one. Carrie, good afternoon. You're on WBOI Talks.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the call. Yes, my objection is to moving Science Friday from Fridays to Saturday, because it's a participation show. And by doing that, you've eliminated all chances of anybody in Northeast Indiana to participate. And if you listen to any of these programs that where there is participation, there's oftentimes calls on these programs. So you've cut that off. My suggestion would be to move it back to Fridays and move the Terry Gross Show, the Fresh Air, and the BBC to Saturday, because they aren't Terry Gross's shows, most especially, is not necessarily timely. I realize BBC is, but they aren't participation shows. And in the effort to reduce participation by taking away Midday Matters and Talk of the Nation and, that kind of stuff, it's very disheartening that you don't want any public input into it. So my suggestion would please to change it back. I think it's easily done. I have checked the many, many other areas of what they do, and they have it on Fridays. So I think if they can do it, you can do it. Thank you.
And Carrie, we appreciate your input. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Bob Kaler.
What do you expect some of the biggest changes to be in 2014 in the station or the programming?
We're going to try to do more of what we're currently doing, both in quantity and to maintain and increase our quality. One of our biggest hopes and dreams is to be able to add an additional reporter, an additional journalist sometime during the calendar year. Right now, Sean and Virginia Alvino work long and hard and do a fantastic job providing content, whether it's the content they give us during their hosting of Morning Edition or All Things Considered, whether it's special programming like this program we're on now that encourages audience participation, or community events and engagement events like Issues and Ales that we staged. But we want to provide more in-depth news reporting. There are far more stories and interesting people and events in this community than we have the staff to cover right now. And one of the reasons, in fact, the only reason we are making a huge focus on raising additional revenues is to plow that right back into community service. And we think the best community service that we can provide is to expand the quality and quantity of our in-depth journalism right here in Northeast Indiana. So that would be the number one thing in our agenda, Bob. And that's not just on the air, of course. It's on our website, which we think has taken leaps and bounds forward in the last several months, and getting out into the community more with audience participation and community events like Issues and Ales. So there are many ways to have participation in a radio station. There are many ways to have input. Certainly call-ins are one of those ways, but these days there are many, many others. There are social media. There are our live events, which will be increasing, such as Issues and Ales. So we're to a little bit in contrast to what Carrie's perception was. We are not in any way trying to cut off audience participation. We are trying to encourage it, but there are many ways to do it other than simply calling into a program.
We have time for maybe one more caller. If somebody has a question or comment, you can get in touch right now at 1-800-471-9264. In the meantime, Peter, let's talk a little bit about this station's relationship to the network. I know a lot of public radio member stations, which are basically independent of NPR. They accept and pay for NPR programming, let's say, but they are their own operations like us. A lot of stations have been fretting as the digital age has come upon us and is here to stay and is developing in new and more personalized ways. Is there work being done between stations and between NPR that can help folks stay local with their public radio station, not just go to, say, an NPR feed?
There are. At this point, the majority of that work, for better or worse, has tended to happen, not exclusively, but to a great extent in what we would call the larger markets, stations with more resources. Sean, as you know from our conversations, one of the things we're doing to try to change that is to both file more pieces with NPR, as you have done, and we're looking to get involved with the new 17... I forgot the exact number, the multi-million-dollar grant that's just been announced with some private funders and the Knight Foundation. We have no idea whether there's a room for us there, but we're certainly going to be investigating that and seeing if that's a way that we can have an NPR and station partnership right here in Fort Wayne.
We have just 2 minutes left in the program and another caller on the line. Looks like we have Rick. And Rick, thanks for joining us on WBOY Talks. If you could be brief, that would be helpful.
Hi. Based on the calls I'm hearing, it's the BBC radio that most people aren't really liking. And people are tuning in to other local talk shows, and what you guys are doing is actually pretty cool. Wouldn't it be cheaper just to do a talk show?
Rick, let's put that to Peter Domanowski, and thank you for the call. Peter, just a few seconds.
Thanks, Rick. I think his question was, would it be cheaper for us to do a local call-in show than to buy programs like the BBC? The answer is no. It would not be less expensive. It would be considerably more expensive. And right now, we simply don't have the size of staff that would allow us to maintain a quality production day in and day out in doing a talk show. That's why we're focusing on doing these several times a year and hopefully providing a service which is valuable to listeners and done at the level of quality that NPR listeners so justly deserve.
Well, Rick, we appreciate your call. In fact, we appreciate all of the folks who gave us a call and commented on our Facebook page today. Unfortunately, we have to leave the conversation there for today, but count on more programs like this in 2014. Big thanks to all of our guests, all of our listeners. Of course, Bob Kaler, we appreciate you being here for the long haul, all both hours of the program.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks very much, Peter Domenoski, our president and general manager. I'm Sean Beter, and this is 89.1 WBOY Fort Wayne, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios. We are your home for NPR News and diverse music. It's 4 o'clock. All Things Considered is next.